So what I want to try and talk about this morning is what I'm calling glimpses of the divine or glimpses of glory. And what I mean by that is that there are times when people actually sense and feel, or we can sense and feel, something happening, something different, something of the glory of God in a different way to which we've otherwise known it, something being revealed to us. If you go back into the Old Testament, God was revealing himself as a progressive act over the period of that time. And so there was quite a lot of sort of contact with God through either angels or through his spirit or whatever it is. So you've got Abraham encountering God quite a lot in conversations and things. He's looking at Sodom and Gomorrah and pleading to God for that. And things are happening when he comes and forms the covenant. There's a movement of God he sees over the pieces of the sacrifices there to affirm the covenant. There are many times when he does. Jacob has experience of wrestling with God, or wrestling with an angel, as it were, at a particular time, and also has these dreams about the ladder or the staircase going up from God to heaven. And we've got Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego experiencing in the midst of this incredibly murderous fiery furnace the protection of God, and the angel comes, and or the person of Jesus, even some people feel, comes into the midst of that, and they're saved, and and perhaps the one which I think demonstrates this more than any of the others is young Isaiah in the temple. Because he comes into the temple at one point, and his experience in the temple that day is the Lord seated on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe fills the temple. And above him were the seraphim, seraphs each with their six wings, and they're flying around him on the throne and calling out, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." And that brings, and I'm going to talk a little later on, that brings a reaction in Isaiah to experience that experience of seeing God in a way he'd never seen God before, in that glory that is there. And then you come to the New Testament, and of course there are occasions when that happens. Perhaps the most famous one is Paul on his way to Damascus, that he then, on that route to Damascus, he suddenly sees this blinding light, and he falls to the ground, and he loses his sight, and Jesus addresses him there in person, and it's utter changing for Paul's life. And later on, he speaks in one of his letters about the fact that he's been, as it were, taken out. He says, "I'm not sure whether I was taken out of my body or not, but I went into a third heaven and I saw things there which I can't really repeat, and I'm not supposed to repeat things of God." And again, I'm going to talk a little further about that a bit later. And of course, there's also the Transfiguration, which takes place on the Mount, where Peter, James, and John have gone up on the mountain, and suddenly they see this radiant Jesus with Moses and Elijah, and he's there, and they witness that. And of course, they don't know how to respond to that, and Peter says a bit of rubbish, but that is the sort of context of what takes place. So there they are in the scriptures. What about now? Do people now have experiences which take them out of themselves, experiences of God which are life-changing? And as you read various accounts of people, that has happened. That has happened to people, and I think it happens much more often than we realize, and could easily have happened for you here. There's a priest in, or a very famous person called Thomas Merton in America, and he one day was just walking down a street, and suddenly he saw all the people round about, but he saw them in a completely different light. It was as if the glory of God was on every single person. Everybody there was made in the image of God, had something of God in them. And he just saw a fantastic, different sense of the families, the people, the individuals there, as they walked around, just the glory of God right in them. There's a chap called Then It Fades Away, of course, after a period of time. The chap called Vaclav Havel, some of you may know, he was the Czech leader of what was called the Velvet Revolution against the Soviet Union, as those countries were coming out of the oppression of Russia and the Soviet Union. And he, of course, was in prison, because that's what happens to leaders when before the actual revolution happens. And he was just walking into the courtyard of the prison, and he saw this huge tree. And sometimes nature is the one that leads you to it. And it rose above all the bars and the fences and the watchtowers and everything else which kept him in prison. And it stretched up, and its leaves were just trembling in the air, and it stretched into this eternity of sky. And somehow he was just captivated by that. I can read a little bit of what he said. He said, "Its trembling leaves and endless sky led him to feel that he was rising above all substance of his small existence in the world into a kind of state outside time, in which all the beautiful things he had ever seen and experienced existed in a total co-present," as he called it, a sense of reconciliation, almost a gentle ascent to the inevitable course of events, combined with a determination to face them and be faced with them. And so that was to him a life-changing thing which came into him at that particular moment. Some of us have experienced it perhaps to a slightly lesser extent. I'm going to speak about an experience later on, but one of the ones recently I had, which is anything like as grand as anything like that, was that Woodhouse Close had a homeless man who was there with him, and they hadn't got it. He'd been sleeping out on the street and outside for many weeks, and he came there for help, and they couldn't find anywhere, so they asked us to have him for 3 nights, and we were glad to do that. And he just had literally one carrier bag with a few things in this carrier bag when he came to us. But he did have a camera. Someone had actually given him a camera in the last couple of days, and he wanted to have a photograph of me with him so that he could remember the time that he'd come and been with us. And as I stretched my arm out over his shoulder, you can imagine that having been on the streets and elsewhere, the odor wasn't exactly as pleasant as you might have expected it to be from a person. But I just gripped his shoulder, and there was just such a sense of love for this guy. I knew nothing about him. I knew, I've met him just a few hours earlier. And yet I just filled with that love for him, which is God's love. And it just sometimes comes onto you, just a small thing like that is just an evidence of God, a glimmer of the divine in our lives. So I think many of you may have experienced similar things of that. So what do we make of it? Does it only happen with special people? Do you need it to be a true Christian? No is the answer to both of those things. It seems it can actually happen to anybody. God seems to be able to do it even if people aren't Christians. And people's response to that will therefore vary. There's a writer called Albert Camus who described having the experience and said it was utterly unbearable. He said, because what it does, it drives you to despair, offering a minute, a glimpse of an eternity, which we should like to stretch out over the whole of time, and then it's taken away. There it is, it's gone. And there can be that sort of feeling amongst us, that if we've had an experience like that, well, why can't we always have it? Because it feels so much better. If we had that around us, our life would be much easier, and we'd be able to live our life in a much better way if those things could be happening to us. And at one level, some people will react like that, instead of having the badness and the struggles that we have to go on with. I don't think that's true. What I think it does is demonstrate that there is a whole lot of things that we don't fully understand. Much more that we don't understand than we even realize. There's much more going on in this universe and in this world around us that we really have no clue about. And going back to Havel, the great tree in dignified repose was against an endless sky. And despite all the things that science is able to do, and science is good and being able to interpret things and find out and explore things more deeply, there's a huge lot of things that go on in nature and in the world which are completely outside our control, any human being's control, and that we have no real clue about at all. And that's the nature of what we're in. I want to come back to Isaiah and Paul. Isaiah saw this, had this experience in the temple. And his response to it was to recognize his smallness and his sinfulness. He talked about being a man of unclean lips and of living with a people of unclean lips and so on. And he could see himself in that light because of the glory that he could see. The beauty, the glory, the wonder of that vision. And the seraph comes along and puts a coal on his tongue and says, your uncleanness has been taken away. So that is now gone. And God then says, who am I going to send? Who will go for me? And of course, Isaiah says, me, I want to go. And that's the pattern of what can happen when we experience God in that sort of way, that we recognize in ourselves things that have gone on in our lives that haven't been good and haven't been as they should be. But we also know that that forgiveness comes as the seraph touched the man's tongue, and that therefore we can now lead that life. We can now, in a new way, understanding how we are in this world in a new way. And coming on to Paul, we've got the same sort of situation. That Paul falls to the ground, he's lost his sight, he gropes around, is beginning to come around, and Ananias comes and talks to him and prays for him, and he gets his sight back and tells him a whole lot of things. But also when he has that experience of being taken up into the third heaven and the things that happened there, and he can't talk about it, what he says then, which is almost the emphasis that he's giving to this experience, is that he was also given what he calls a thorn in the flesh, in case he got too conceited about that. And the thorn in the flesh, we don't know what it was. We don't know whether it was a physical ailment. We don't know whether it was a mental ailment. We don't know what it was. It doesn't say. But he pleads with God to take it away. And God's reply to Paul is, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And that obviously had an incredible impact on Paul. Because when you read his letters, he doesn't tell you, as a number of big churches tell people round about, how many churches he's planted, how many people were converted through him, how many healings have taken place, how many miracles have happened, all the fantastic things that God has done. What he tells you about is how many times he's been beaten, how many times he's been shipwrecked, how many times he's been in jail, how many times. So he's emphasizing his weakness, because he said, actually says, I've decided to boast in my weakness. Now, I don't know whether we all have to boast in our weakness, but actually that is where he's coming from, and that is the reaction to the experience of seeing God and the revelation of God at that particular moment. And what am I supposed to be saying here? No, I think that's it. And I think for me, just on a slightly personal note, there wasn't a great image of God. I'm thinking now back 50 years, nearly 50 years. But the incredible moment was when I was just reading a commentary on the Sermon on the Mount and on the Beatitudes. I was working at the time in the city. I was actually fighting an election at the time and was a banker, money man. And as I read those Beatitudes, the truth just hit me like a brick. These things written here were nothing like my ambitions and my interests and my concern. And yet here is truth. This is truth in its eternity, absolute truth. And that just so made a difference that I didn't fight the election. I'd left the city a year later, and I'd gone on to do a whole lot of completely other things, mainly in the East End of London, and then later up here. So that is something which I think we can look forward to and look at and think about and see that can come out of our experience of seeing glimpses of God and the glory. And I want to just finish with another story, personal one. I think many of you will remember there was a tsunami in the Far East in about 2003, 2004. It was about that time. And it was devastating. It just went straight across a whole lot of countries and many people died and so on. We were in Newham, and which is a borough in London, West Ham, and we actually had quite a big Tamil congregation in that borough. And they had their own church, and we had very good relationships with them, and met their leaders, and we did things together. And the response to that tsunami was that the churches together gathered money to send relief out to Sri Lanka, which is where this group of people came from. And what we did was, because they had all the contacts out there, we were going to buy 5 motor fishing boats to replace the ones that had been destroyed by the tsunami. And so the money was collected to be able to do this, and Hannah and I flew out to Sri Lanka in order to, as it were, present these boats to the village that we were in. And as we were there, we saw the devastation that had been caused by this tsunami. It was incredible. I mean, whole villages were completely razed to the ground. You couldn't see anybody there. Many lives had been lost to people there. And in the middle of it all, it wasn't just a tsunami. It was the fact that there was a civil war going on in the middle of this, and that the Tamil Tigers were attacking and occupying quite a big bit of Sri Lanka at that stage. And that was the bit that we were going to, because we were working with the Tamils, but not the Tamils who were wanting to fight in that way. And so all these things were happening to those people. And yet, we were received with such grace by the pastor of the church that we were attending, and who received us, And we went to the church on the Sunday morning, and the visiting pastor had lost his wife and a child in the tsunami, and yet was able to preach there and speak about retaining his faith and being able in the midst of this disaster to be able to do that and to encourage people. In fact, it was a celebration of a first birthday of another child to somebody, so I thought it was quite painful for this guy to be there doing that when this was going on. And just little things that were done, that Hannah and I went for a walk out in one evening and saw some of the tents and talked to some of the people that were on the road. And we only discovered afterwards that our pastor had actually asked a small boy of 8 to follow us at a certain distance to make sure that we were safe. And there's just a love and a graciousness and something in the midst of that that is able to sustain people in the face of these tragedies. And I believe it's that assurance that the writer of the Hebrews calls being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And these glimpses of the divine or the glory can help keep that hope and faith alive. Amen.